And the tapes are rolling.
Okay, thank you. Hi, my name is Melissa Fichtinger, and I will be doing the presentation today on the IBM EWLM VER2 Control Center overview. I would like to state that questions on this presentation can be sent to Madeline Nick at madidie@us.ibm.com. And there will be a question and answer call sometime in early October. So please send her any questions before October 1st so that they can be included in that discussion. The agenda of this presentation is that I'm just going to do a quick overview of what we had for Release 1, the quick overview of the Control Center, and then I'm going to start talking about the new functions that we have for Release 2. So I'm on chart number 4, page 4. I'm just going to have a few charts here of overview, as I said. So first of all, in order to get to the Control Center, the Control Center URL, it's the same as it was for Release 1. And the Control Center URL uses https://, and then the IP address or host name of the domain manager, and then colon, and then your web server port, followed by slash, web UI, slash. The IP address or host name is the MA value that you use when setting up and configuring EWLM. And the port is given by, is assigned by WebSphere. And so after the create command is finished, you can look at the output to determine what that port is. And then I give an example. Moving on to the next slide, page 5. EWLM has three roles that are used in order to sign into EWLM: administrator, operator, and monitor. The administrator role has access to all parts of EWLM Control Center, which include ability to create and edit domain policies and all parts of a domain policy, deploy domain policies, activate service policies, and view reporting data. The operator only has access to the manage and monitor subdirectories in the tree. And so they have all the same capabilities as the administrator, except they cannot create and edit domain policies. And then the monitor user has access to only the monitor subdirectory, and he's able to view all the reporting data. The domain policy in the Control Center in EWLM is the high-level container that contains all the performance goals and the work that those goals are going to be measured against. And so I'm not going to go through every part of the domain policy since this is similar to Release 1. And then also the reporting data under the monitor section in EWLM Control Center is where the user can go to then see all their performance data. And we have different types of monitors and topology. And those are we've had those in R1, so I'm not going to go through all those. Now for the new items that the Control Center has for Release 2. I'm on chart number 9, and the first thing that the user will notice different for Release 2 is that when they log on to their Control Center URL, they're now redirected to a page that has a login button, and they have to press the button, and then a new browser window comes up, and that's where they actually have to sign in using their user ID and password. Some reasons for this, because there were some problems in Release 1 where users were using the next and back buttons, and that was causing problems. And so now we have removed those buttons and that toolbar from the actual Control Center panel, and so users can't make that mistake. And we also have a little more real estate now that we have removed the toolbar and such. Now we have more room to actually show data. Moving on to the next chart, I'm on page 10. What in Release 1 was called Domain Properties has now been renamed to Domain Settings in Release 2. And you can get to it from the top level toolbar. There's a hot link. And once you open up the Domain Settings, we now have more than what we did in Release 1. In Release 1, we just had what we now have as Domain Properties, which you can see in the second picture. We've added the EWM Management Directory. And under this directory, users have the ability to enable and disable the load balancing function in EWM and the partition workload management function. The load balancing function gives EWM resource recommendations to the load balancers, and then it's up to load balancers whether or not they want to follow these recommendations. And the partition workload group management function, if the user is on a Power 5 hardware, then EWLM can adjust the resources among the partitions to meet performance goals on the domain. And I think there's sessions on both of these later that will cover those in more detail from an actual functional perspective rather than just a control center perspective. I'm on chart 11. Another new item that was added to the domain settings is the capability to restore the sample policies that are shipped with EWLM. EWLM ships sample domain policies, applications, and platforms, and users have the ability to go in and edit those. And if they accidentally would edit them such that they're no longer usable, since the names have to match the ARM instrumented application names, then the user has the ability here to restore the ones that were shipped with IBM. They can also click on the twisty above each restore button, and then they will get a list of the actual policies that will be restored. On chart 12, there's a serviceability section also added now to the domain settings. And in the serviceability section, this contains all different sorts of trace functions for the domain manager. There's also some advanced tracing options for managed servers and for partition workload groups. We tell the users not to change these session settings unless they're directed by EWLM service to do so. And I believe there's another whole presentation specifically on serviceability, so I'm not going to go into detail here, but this is where it's found in the control center. On page 13, when verifying a domain policy, which we had that function in release 1, but now for release 2 we've added the option for the user to have a granular verification. So he can choose now to either verify it on all the managed servers in the domain or just a specific managed server. On page 14, when editing an application or a platform policy, the users have the option to add or remove the EWLM-specific filters. In release 1, the users couldn't change the EWLM filters, and now we give them the option to do that. The EWLM-supplied application filter policies do have filters pre-selected based on what application, based on what the application and the platform supports, and now they can go ahead and edit these policies, and they can change the selection if need be. On page 15, we've added the capability to export domain policies, applications, and platforms. These are exported to an XML file, and then they could be imported on a different domain. On page 16, when looking at the service classes, we've added icons to signify what type of service class each one is. So we have transaction class, process class, and partition class type service classes. And so now this is a quick way for the users to determine what type they're looking at when doing their service classes. On page 17, when editing a service class, we've now also added a table showing the transaction process or partition classes that use this service class. This is useful to the user because when they went to delete a service class, we don't let them delete it unless they have either deleted all the transaction process and partition classes associated with it or changed those so that there's none associated with it. So this way they have a quick way of viewing which transaction process or partition classes are associated with a particular service class. On page 18, when creating and editing either a transaction process or partition class, we now have a new rule builder that we use to create the rules. The old rule builder that we had in release 1 was kind of cryptic, and it just had the rule, and then you could use up and down arrows in order to order them and left-right arrows to say if it was an and or an or relationship. And so you could read that. It wasn't a very easy-to-read rule. You had to just look at it and by the indentation that would tell you if it was an AND rule or an OR rule. Our new rule builder is much more usable and easy to read. On the first chart here, the part that's circled in red, that's what the rule looks like when we're finished with it. And so you can see that it's very logical, and the AND and ORs are spelled right out for you. The second chart is what, when you choose to edit a rule or create a new rule, this is the user interface that the user gets. And you can see we have a list of filter types in the left-hand panel, and then we have the list of rules. And so the user can drag and drop filter types into a rule, and then they can change the operator to be equals or not equals, and then they can enter their value. They can press the edit button, which then brings up a separate window for them to do that editing in if they don't feel comfortable doing it right here, or if the value is like a maybe a URL or something that's very long that they need more real estate to actually view it and edit it. They can click and drag and drop on the AND and OR operators at the top of the panel, and then they can drag those to create a new rule into link rules. They can also right-click on any of the relationships, any of the lines between the rules, to change the rule between an AND or an OR. So this is an easy way for the user to build quite complex rules. As you can see, we have a nested OR inside a nested AND with another AND. And so already that rule is getting a little more complex than what we had in release one. Moving on to chart 19. We have a new class type. We have partition classes this release. And this is a partition class that identifies the work that a partition processes. And so we had, in release one, we had transaction classes that process work that came from a transaction or application. And we had process classes that identified work that came from a process. Now this release, we have partition classes that identify work that come from a partition. So we have a new type when creating a service class. And then we also have the partition classes. Then you can actually create a partition class. On chart 20, then under the monitor section, you can monitor the partition classes and you can view the performance data for those. And then I also have shown here the details pane, so what a details panel looks like for the partition class. Moving on to page 21, we now have the ability to view activation history. And so this is when you're looking at your service policies, we now give the capability to view the history of the activation. So you can see which service classes or which service policies were activated and by who and when. Moving on to page 22. We also now have the capability to show workload options. And so from either an exception, from either the monitor exceptions link or the monitor service classes link, we now have a checkbox at the top of the table that says show workloads. And when that checkbox is checked, we show the workload column. And this gives the user the ability to sort the service classes by workload. And if they don't want to see these, then they can uncheck the box, and we don't show the workloads in the table. Page 23, we've added tier-level transaction counts onto the details pane for exceptions, for service classes, and for transaction classes. What this means is now we can look at the example I have shown here is a transaction class, and we show the transactions and the different hops that transaction has taken. And you can now see the transaction count for each hop. So a little more detailed data there. On page 24, we now have a transaction rate monitor for the process class. This monitor allows the user to view the number of transactions that complete per second. And this was a monitor that was not available for the process class in release one. So it's now available for those. On page 25, we now have the load balancer functions and load balancer reports. The load balancers are optional based on if the user chose to enable them to the domain settings. And if the user has chosen to enable them, then they can see their load balancers. And we allow a details view, and in the details view, you can see the group in the top view, and you can click on each group to view which server application that load balancer is monitoring in the bottom part of that view. On page 26, we also now have functions for the partition management that is also enabled through the domain settings. We now have a monitor / partitions section in the left-hand tree. And so when you click on this, you can see your partition workload groups that are being monitored. And if you click on the details for a particular partition, then you can see the details, and you can see we have it lists each partition and the detailed information about each partition that's being monitored. And then we have a pie chart that shows the processor utilization distribution of the partitions within this group. And so you can see how the CPU is being distributed between the partitions in this group. And I think there's another chart that talks more about the partition workload groups in more detail. Another presentation that will be given later. On page 27, for the real-time monitors, we now have the ability to view a historical data of up to 24 hours past historical data. If you open up a real-time monitor, we now have the pause button at the top, and the pause now tells it that it'll stay frozen here. So if you're in live mode, which once you're in pause mode, then the button changes to say live. And so if you choose live mode, then this dialogue, this monitor, will keep getting refreshed each time a new data comes in. If you choose to pause it, then this monitor will stay here, and you have used the arrow on the bottom of the monitor to go either forward or backward in time. So you can use the slider to view any portion of the monitor data that you would like to see. We also have the ability to export this data. Page 28. We've added the ability to export the monitor data for the performance index monitor, the goal achievement monitor, the transaction rate monitor, the process utilization monitor, the response time distribution chart, and the LPAR management chart data. So you can export these, and they're put into a CSV, a comma-separated values file, which you can then display in Excel or some similar spreadsheet. Moving on to chart 29, we also have the ability to export the topology data. We can export application and server topology also into a CSV formatted file. On chart 30, we've made a lot of improvements to the topology. First of all, in the first chart on the top left-hand corner of this chart, the first picture, the first red circle there that circles two servers, we now have server and instance numbers at a high level, so the customer doesn't have to drill down to see how many servers there actually are. They can see that right there. There's two. The next circle that's circled there, the next red circle, we now have the successful transaction counts shown with the relationship line for a quick indicator of potential problems, so a user can see how many successful transactions are happening between those two servers. So, and then if you drill down, then that number is separated. If you drill down into the, if you go to the window on the right, you can see that we drill down, and those numbers are separated then based on which server those numbers are coming from. We also have the warning icon. So when a server is not meeting its goal, it's yellow, and we have the little yellow warning icon. And they can drill down into that server to see exactly where the problem is occurring. We also have enhanced flyover information, which you can see in the purple on the last chart here. There's lots of information. All the information about those objects are now in the flyover help, flyover information. On chart 31, we've changed the response time now to be in microseconds versus milliseconds, just to give more accurate times. More accurate information, so you can see that those numbers now have microseconds. Chart 32, we now have a new function called hop details, and you can see the hop details for an exception, for a service class, for a transaction class, or for a process class. And what the hop details is we can see more information on the next panel, on panel page 33. This is the hop details window. And so the hop details gives data for each of the hops in the class. We have this tree structure on the left-hand side, and that's what's used in order to select which nodes should be shown in the table. Each of the blue squares in the tree can be clicked on to be expanded to see its children, its child nodes. The selected node drop-down, which is above the tree, can be used to decide what you want to see concerning the selected node in the tree. So, for example, if I just had Web High selected and I said selected node, I would only see one item in the table. The other options are children. It'll show the children of the selected nodes just one level deep. Another option is descendants. It'll show all descendants of that node that's selected. Or ancestors, which shows all parent nodes, all levels deep, all the way up to the top node of all the selected nodes. So that's just a way to control the number of items that you're seeing in the table so the table doesn't get unmanageable. We also have the hide tree button underneath the tree, and you can use that. Once you kind of get your table set up to view the information you want to view, you can then select hide tree, and that tree will be will no longer be displayed, and then it'll give you a little more room to see the table. There's checkboxes that are above the table, and these checkboxes are used to specify what columns should be shown within the table. So by checking those, additional columns will be added to the table. Okay, so that's kind of the overview of all the new enhancements to the Control Center for Release 2. And that's the end of the presentation.